Accession number 23348, Mr. George Pratt. Reels 1 and 2 of ultimately 3. Left channel is informant's mic only. Right channel should be interviewer's mic only.
Mr. George Pratt, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Pratt?
2nd of September, 1918, at Muswell Hill, North London.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background and very early childhood?
My father was a magistrate's clerk in London.
And did you have a happy childhood with any others in the family?
Yeah, I had a brother, Leslie, and...
What about your education?
We went to Highgate School, public school, North London.
And can you tell us a bit about your education? How did you do at school?
Not terribly well. When I was born, I had trouble with my legs. I wore splints until I was about 6. So my education started a bit late, and it made quite a difference to catch up. I wasn't very brilliant at school.
Did you have any particular favourite subjects or skills there?
Geography and mathematics. Always top in mathematics.
That was your thing. Mm. And what about sport?
Not very good at sport because my leg trouble. I did play football and cricket, but not to any great extent. And I was always very keen on playing fives.
What about hobbies outside of school? Any particular hobbies?
Carpentry and walking, really.
You weren't in any of the boys' things, boys' brigade, boy scouts?
No.
Were you aware of the approach of war, in the late 1930s? Did you see it coming?
We saw it coming, because when I went to work on the train, you could see people digging trenches in their back garden.
Had you followed what was going on in Germany, Hitler, the rise of Hitler, that sort of thing? Were you interested in that sort of thing?
Not particularly.
What about your work? Where did you go to work? What was your job?
I worked in Barclays Bank in various branches. And
what as?
I started off as a junior and went up to various branches in London. I finished up in head office in clearing department.
Before the war?
That's before the war.
And did you enjoy the work?
Yes. Each branch was different, whether it was like Portman Square in different parts of London. It was almost like a different job. Some were in the rag trade, some were in the jewellery trade.
And... what about your enlistment? You enrolled in March 1939. What can you tell us why you decided to join the Territorial Army?
Well, the Bevin decided to call up people for the mines in April 39. I was coming up for 21 in September, and I could have been called up for the mines. I wasn't very happy about going down the mines. So I joined the Territorials just on the edge of London, in the city.
Now, which Territorials did you join? Where did you go, and how did you sign up to join them?
Up near Highbury Corner, it was a Territorial unit.
What was its name?
64th Medium Regiment, and they were short of members, but they had guns. I queued for 3 nights... Before I even got to the door to try and join. And by the end of the third night, they'd filled up the strength required for the first regiment, the existing regiment, and they also formed a complete new regiment, without guns, of course.
And which were you in? You were in the second?
I was in the second lot. I forget what the first was called.
This was called the 64th Medium Regiment.
Well, I joined the 64th Medium.
And that was at Highbury...
Highbury Court.
The drill hall. Was it called Highbury Corner Drill Hall? Or?
I can't remember the name of the road. Very near the edge of the city.
And do you remember the procedure when you signed up? How they actually took you... You know, what you had to sign, whether they tested you at all?
No. There were too many people queuing to do much at all. It took your name and occupation, and that was more or less it. No medical or anything at all.
Now, what were you kitted out with when you joined them? Uniform and kit. Do you remember?
We had a uniform. We were provided with a uniform.
Do you remember what it was?
A battle dress. When they found out that I worked in the bank, they decided to make me a specialist or a surveyor, and instead of doing 3 nights a week gun drill, I used to go to a polytechnic 3 nights a week in the city of London to learn slide rules and all the other mathematical things.
Now, did you actually do any before you, we'll come on to that, but did you actually do any basic drill?
No,
marching
nothing,
up and down?
Nothing at all. I was just to the polytechnics to learn mathematics.
And do you know which polytechnic it was?
No. Somewhere near Highbury Corner.
And what exactly did you learn? Do you remember what...
How to do trigonometry, slide rules, all general mathematics involved with artillery. It was a special course for artillery, and there were 6 of us from the new regiment which went, we went together.
Did you cope with the maths? You'd like maths.
Yeah.
Did you find it difficult?
No.
And how long did this course last for?
Until I was called up. I was still doing it.
So essentially, your first period of military service, in a sense, was just 3 nights a week going to the polytechnic and studying.
And that was it. I never went near the drill hall.
And there was no practical work?
No.
It was just theoretical?
Theoretical.
Now, what about your actual call? So you didn't go to camp either?
No.
What about the actual call-up? What do you remember of that?
I was in the office 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I think it was the 31st of August. The phone rang, and there were 3 territorials in the branch, and we were all told to leave our jobs immediately and report to the barracks by 6 o'clock in the evening.
Now, how did you feel about that? Because, you know...
It was a bit of a shock, but we didn't know what was coming afterwards.
Were you worried?
No. So well, it was expected.
So what happened when you got there to the barrack, to Highbury Corner Drill Hall?
We slept on the floor of a neighbouring school, and then of course there wasn't any food, so they cancelled all the local restaurants and cafes. They cancelled all the wedding feast for the next few weeks, and we actually fed on wedding breakfasts, which was quite interesting.
And what were you actually doing during this period in September?
We were guarding the railways in South London from a parachutist or who might come down.
So what would happen? Tell us what a typical duty would be.
Well, we had a rifle and we went on the bridges and railway lines in South London, just hoping there wouldn't be any parachutist or...
Were you actually patrolling along the lines, or would you be
at sea? We were on icy lines. It was quite dangerous.
And
we slept on the railway stations.
And how many would be in each group?
Well, probably about 10.
And would you be split up into twos or individuals?
Usually twos.
Walking up the lines?
Up and down the icy lines in the autumn.
I presume nothing happened?
No, nothing happened.
And when did you were staying during that period? You were staying at the railway stations. When did you went in billets and Edgware? When would that be?
That followed.
How long were you on the railway duty then?
About a couple of months, I should think. And then we were all put on the underground train. We went to Edgware. We were marched down the housing estate, and we were allocated to, obviously, the householders had been previously visited, and we were allocated two or three to a house for the occupants to feed us and do everything else required.
And that was in the Edgware area?
That was Edgware.
And what were the billets like?
The one we had was a very pleasant lady, and she fed us well and looked after us. And there were three of us sleeping in the house.
And you got on well?
We got on very well, but a lot of the people had pretty grim billets.
And what were you doing while you were there?
I think we did route marches, very little really.
What would a typical route march be like for you?
It was all right.
Any trouble with your legs?
Not then, no.
And had you actually been introduced to your guns yet? No, actually done any practical guns?
No. The gunners had, but the surveyors hadn't. And then we moved on to Burke.
I should have asked you which battery you were in, of 64th Medium Regiment.
212.
And you were with them all the time?
No.
Just
at the start.
Yeah.
And we went to Burke Hampstead, billeted in a church hall, and the guns were delivered very shortly afterwards. Six-inch howitzers.
Now, what did you... I know you weren't on the goods, but what did you think of a six-inch howitzer?
Not knowing much about guns, they were pretty impressive because they fired 100-pound shells and they were pretty heavy to lift out. It took two men to lift a gun out, a shell out and put it in. But they lobbed them. They hadn't got a great range.
And did you actually... was there a firing range near Burke Hampstead?
Oh, no.
So you still didn't see them fired?
No, it weren't fired until we went up to Reedsdale, I think it's in Yorkshire, to do the firing.
Reedsdale. I think that's Northumberland.
Is it Northumberland?
Near the Tyne.
Somewhere up that way, Reedsdale.
Was that a move up there, or was it just to a firing camp?
No, just for a firing camp.
What do you remember of the firing camp there?
Nothing really. Don't remember much about it.
What about your sort of your role as a specialist? Do you remember what you were doing?
Well, we were trained on how to get all the guns lined up on the same zero line.
And do you remember how you did it? I know you're a bit vague on this. But
no, very complicated. There were 37 possibilities on firing a gun. You could the temperature of the charge and the age of the gun and the temperature of the air and so many, there were about 37 possibilities, and eventually you could hit a target 10 miles away almost for sure.
Now, were you a gun position assistant or a observation post assistant?
No, we had a little hole in the ground usually. We had all our a table where you worked out how you could get all the guns on the same.
So you were at the gun position, not an OPAC, you were a gun position.
No, we did go to OPs and phone back or wireless back. You could fire a gun from an OP.
Okay, so what about the noise of the guns at Reedsdale? Would that make an impression on you?
No, they were quite loud.
So, where after Reedsdale? Back to Burke Hampstead?
I think we went back to Burke Hampstead.
And then you had a period, I think, of moving around in England. Do you remember much about that? This is edging into 1940 here. Do you remember much about that?
We moved to the East Coast, and suddenly one night we were all on the move. We thought they'd said the Germans had landed, and it was all a false alarm. This was in Ely. In Lincolnshire, really. Nothing happened, and we.
That would probably be September 1940, would it?
Possibly, yeah.
And anything else happened during that period, you know, before you left? You left in November 1940. Anything else that you recall from that period of training in England?
No, not really.
So, when did you first hear you were going overseas?
It must have been about September or perhaps October 40. We were in High Wycombe and we were told we were going overseas. We were issued with hot climate kit and pith helmets, and of course we didn't know where we were going. We were put on a train and we went to the Clyde in Scotland, and we went aboard a troop ship called the Otranto with about 5,000 Australians aboard amongst us. And I think we sailed the night of the raid on Coventry Cathedral. I think it was the 7th of November. We went across the North Atlantic. We had an escort of 27 warships, and there were hundreds of various troop ships and cargo ships. The speed had to be all based on the slowest boat. Fortunately, at this time, it didn't appear to be the U-boat trouble, but the sea was absolutely appalling. It was like crossing the Himalayas in a boat.
Were you seasick at all?
Only once. A lot of people were. And
what were conditions like on your mess deck?
Pretty appalling. We slept in hammocks, but where possible, I took a mattress and went on deck. And we went down into Freetown in Sierra Leone, because nobody ever told you where you were going, where you were. So we asked the crew, and they said, "Oh, you're in Freetown in Sierra Leone." We said, "Thanks very much." We stopped there a few days. It's a very beautiful place.
Did you get ashore?
No, you weren't allowed ashore. The natives used to come out in carved out tree trunk boats and tried to give us a supply of oranges and bananas, and the Australians aboard dropped sandbags on these little boats to try and sink them. And then we went down South Atlantic and we had Christmas in Durban. Once again, we didn't know where we were until we asked the crew, and we went ashore in Durban for about 3 days.
What do you remember of the Christmas celebrations at Durban?
Well, the locals met us at the harbour and they took bunches of us home for Christmas.
And what was it like, the South African Christmas? I mean, you know, did they make a fuss of you?
Oh, it certainly did. We were very well looked after. I only were out there about 3 or 4 days. Yes, they certainly looked after us. And we had a look round Durban, and we were back on the boat up through the Indian Ocean, the Red Sea, the Suez Canal, to Port Said in Egypt. I can't remember how we got from Port Said to the pyramids, but the next thing I remember is arriving at the pyramids. I think we probably went by train to Cairo and then by road.
So what happened when you got to... What was your first impression of Egypt?
Well, pretty rough.
Why? What was wrong with it?
All the people, you know, and the noise and the traffic, and absolutely terrible. Anyway, we were encamped by the pyramids. And in those days, the pyramids were open internally and you could go up them, but this is no longer possible. And within a few days, I caught elephantitis.
Now, hang on, did you visit the pyramids?
Yes, we went up inside. Well, quite awe-inspiring, especially inside. You have to crawl on your tummy to get right to the middle. And the steps outside are probably nearly 3 foot tall because all the outer casing is gone, of course.
Did you climb to the top?
Oh, we climbed to the top. And the view, both ways, north and south, you've got the Blue Nile, you've got the about 4 miles of fields, green fields, and then the desert. So you've got the blue, the green, as far as you can see into the wilderness.
And what were you doing while you were at... That be at Mina Camp, would it? Would it be
at Mina Camp.
And what would you be doing?
Well, we spent the evenings in Cairo. Well, we did a bit of training.
What would you do in Cairo?
Well, just have a look round at the... Well, they had cinemas and... you know, restaurants and things.
Did you drink then?
I didn't drink.
You were teetotal?
I was teetotal.
And did the local people pester you, or were they friendly, or how did they behave towards you when you visited Cairo?
Well, they were friendly, but the usual trouble was the shoe blacks. They wanted to clean the shoes. You said they're clean, and they daubed them a load of black muck till you had them cleaned. But the population and the stores, oh, they're very friendly.
And what about this training you were doing? Was there anything that sticks in your mind about the training? Was there anything different, or was there any desert element to it?
No.
I know you weren't with them long before you got elephantitis.
No.
Well, tell me about this elephantitis, because that's fairly unusual.
Well, you go to bed as normal, and when you wake up in the morning, you can't get any clothes on you, as if you've been blown up like a balloon. It's called elephantitis. The only thing is that you haven't got a trunk.
And did you feel badly, or were you just...
We just can't dress. You can't. You're so big. You can't. You can't really do anything.
Were you running a fever or anything as well, or was it just you'd swollen up?
Just swollen up, I think. I've taken down to Cairo into a hospital and treated me covered in black treacle. But I was visited by many doctors from many countries who came to visit this great disease. It's not all that rare, but it's not all that common. And
how did you catch it? I mean,
it's just a bug or bite or something in the water. It's very unpleasant, but it doesn't last long.
And how long were you hospitalised with that?
Probably only about 2 weeks.
So around in February, basically. February.
Yes.
41. And what happened? I mean, while you were there, your unit left, didn't they?
Well, they went to down south to Abyssinia, Eritrea, to fight the Italians. And I went to base camp in Cairo, and I was put into the 7th Medium Regiment.
Now, so that would be still February, wouldn't it, or would that be into March?
It could be into March.
And which battery of 7th Medium?
I don't know, really remember.
Or were you at headquarters?
I was in the specialist.
But, I mean, were you at the headquarters battery? So you don't remember?
No.
And what did you think of 7th Medium Regiment? Because you've been in Territorial Unit, these were regulars.
Yeah.
How did you feel about them? What was you...
I didn't get on terribly well.
Why not? What was it about regulars?
They've been used to fighting on the northwest frontier, whereas the 64th Medium were all sort of bank clerks and accountants. The bringing up and type of the people was very hard to get on with. We then went to Alexandria, and we caught a destroyer. They wanted to get it to Greece quickly. Then we went to Athens and unloaded all the guns. They came on a separate ship.
Now, what guns did they have?
I think they had 7-inch howitzers.
6-inch?
6-inch howitzers. And after a short time in Athens, we set off for the north. Well, I don't see it in Greece. There don't seem to be any roads after about 7 miles after leaving Athens. They're just cart tracks and mountain ranges.
And where were you heading towards?
We don't know.
It says Mount Olympus here.
We're going towards Mount Olympus. And it was all just cart tracks, mountain ranges, plains, more mountain, loads of the guns and tanks. They went over the edge and finished up hundreds of feet down in the valleys. There was nothing to stop them. And when we eventually got to Mount Olympus, we didn't know who we were fighting, the Germans or the Italians. There wasn't much fighting going on anyway, but we hadn't got the ammunition. All we'd had was 14 rounds per gun.
Well, that's a pretty serious shortcoming for an artillery unit.
Well, it's short for anybody. And I don't remember doing any actual fighting or firing. And then we all about turned and told to get as fast as we could down to back to Athens.
Hang on a minute, you've got something here about attacks by Stukas. When was that?
On Mount Olympus, we had a little camp and we were attacked by Stukas several times a day.
Now, what was it like? You described to us what a Stuka attack was like, and what you'd do and what you felt.
Being my first encounter with any war at all, it was absolutely terrifying. The bombs had whistles on and the planes had sirens on. And they used to circle overhead to make as much noise as they could. Then they dipped their noses and all come down screaming in the most appalling noise. Terrifying.
Any closest get? How accurate were they? Or were you just lucky?
They weren't very accurate and we were lucky.
So you didn't suffer many casualties from them?
No. I don't think their use was all that valuable, really. It's just the noise.
Now, another point was, did you dig in at all?
We tried to dig in. It was very rocky and the officers told us to dig their trenches. Well, it was very hard going, and having dug their trenches, they wanted their tents dug in so they'd be safe at night time. But we never had a chance at all to dig our own trenches or protect ourselves, which didn't exactly please us.
And so the only thing, you weren't in action as far as you were, except you were attacked by the Stukas. But you weren't in action.
I don't remember any artillery fire.
So what happened? You weren't at Mount Olympus long, were you?
No, very short time.
Where then?
Then we had to try and get down this terrible mountain road back to the south, because everybody was just trying to get out at the same time. Everybody was nose to tail, tanks, guns, lorries. And on the plains, we were bombed and machine gunned by Dorniers.
Then how did that differ?
Now, they dropped their bombs first, and the bigger the better, because they made a bigger hole. And when they'd bombed, they came back a machine gun. So we used to rush for the biggest bomb hole we could find and get to the bottom, so we'd miss the machine gunning. And this proved quite effective.
So you were... these attacks must have taken a fair effect on the line of traffic.
Oh, yes, several vehicles got knocked out, and these had to be dragged off the road and pushed down into the valley.
Now, where were you going?
Well, I don't know. We were just going as far south as we could. Nobody really. We weren't in a regiment, we weren't in anything. We were just two bods in a 1,500-weight lorry.
What had happened to the regiment?
I don't know. Everybody was higgledy-piggledy in this terrific long line of traffic over the mountains. We had no officers or NCOs or anything.
So it was just you and one other?
Yeah, there were two of us in the lorry.
So where did you go? What happened?
Well, we just followed the crowd and we got to the Corinth Canal and went a bit further down to Argos Bay. We found some of the regiment there. Well, of course, everybody went there. We found some of our regiment there, and we hid in the olive trees. And I think we were fed by the Greeks as much as we were fed at all.